There you go. Okay, so again, I welcome everybody. Bechol Mokom Shehu to this unusual, most unusual Yahrzeit shiur. Obviously, we're collectively in an unusual circumstances, unprecedented, certainly in any of our lifetimes, and we make the best of the situation. My father's Yahrzeit is this evening, tomorrow, the 27th of Adar. That's the way a year ago. This is the first Yahrzeit. Actually, it was more than a year ago, but last year, as some will recall, it was a leap year, an Ibra year. So Yahrzeit actually is the 27th of Adar Rishon. So he actually was Nifta before Purim, before we observed Purim. The Yahrzeit is this year, the 27th of the only Adar we have. So hence our getting together this evening. My original plan had been, as customary, to have a Siyum and Shisha Siddur Mishnah. Many people, including probably some people here, volunteered to learn and hopefully did learn the Mishnayos. And the plan was to have a Siyum Mishnayos this evening with some sort of a Suda to follow. But that's obviously not doable at this point, and can't get the other Kaddish at this point. So we'll put that aside. Maybe as Hashem, but the second Yahrzeit at some other occasion, we'll be able to observe that practice. Tonight, instead, I decided to give a shiur, Leila Nishmas, my father. The name is Aryeh Yehuda, Rabbi Yaakov Shmuel. And many of you, as I see on the faces over here, many of you knew my father. Oliver Shalom, my father was a professor of English literature at Yeshiva University for some 40 years or so. And when I was trying to think of what to do in terms of the shiur, my wife suggested that maybe I should do something that relates to English literature and Torah and Halacha. My father, again, was an English professor, but he also had a keen interest in and the love for Torah learning and for hearing a good piece of Drush, I stress that. He had very little tolerance for we might call vertlach, I guess, that are not so intellectually satisfying and so on, but he was very interested in learning, and he found the joy from that, as a number of Rabbanim will be able to test. In any event, my wife suggested I should make something, come up with something relating to English literature and his and Torah, passions of his. And so what came to mind immediately, given that one of his areas of interest was Shakespeare, he taught many Shakespeare courses, what came to mind immediately was a very fascinating, or at least I find a very fascinating essay by Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, Zichron Avracha, which appears in one of his farm called Le'or HaAlocha. Rav Zevin, see, my son is now posting the Mar Makomos, which we'll get to presently, if that will help you. You don't have it yourself. Rav Zevin was one of the leading Talmid Chachamim and Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael in the mid to the early part of the later 20th century. He was a tremendous Talmid Chacham, but also, and this I think my father appreciated about him, a very, very clear writer. He wrote his Sfarim in ways that really are very understandable. Rav Zevin, as I said, was one of the leading Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. I happened to be in Eretz Yisrael when he passed away. He died in 1978, and that was the year I was in Eretz Yisrael for the year, so I was actually at his Levaya. And an interesting story, just as a side point. We went to his Levaya. It was one of those Levayas I think many of us have seen pictures of or films of, you know, throngs of people in the streets of Yerushalayim heading towards Har HaMenuchos. And the way it works is they walk through the streets of Yerushalayim. So I was there, and other friends of mine were there. And, you know, so we were participating. And basically the way they work in Eretz Yisrael, they don't have a wooden coffin like we have here. They have the person's on like a stretcher, so to speak, and wrapped in, I guess, besides the tachrich and the shrouds, it was wrapped in some kind of a hammock. Anyway, and people take turns holding the wooden poles of what's holding the deceased, and carry it for a few paces. So as you get closer to the front, comes your turn. So somehow, after a while, I was really close to the front, and I grabbed hold of, you know, someone handed me one of the poles. So I carried it for a few steps, and then I passed it to the next person. And the next person was a shortish man. He was wearing a black hat, very thick glasses, and he took over for me. And I did a double take, and I realized it was Menachem Begin, who was at that time was the Rosh HaMemshalah. And he looked like a yeshiva person. He was wearing a hat with glasses. But by the time I got my wits to myself, I was quickly jostled out of the way by the various members of the security detail. But for 1 second, I was standing next to Menachem Begin, who took his turn to carry Rav Zevin's remains to Har HaMenuchos. But in any event, Rav Zevin wrote quite a number of svarim. He was the first editor-in-chief of the so-called Encyclopedia Talmudis, a monumental work which is still in progress, Talmudic Encyclopedia. And he wrote famous obviously the Sefer HaMoedim BaHalacha, which is available in English, article translated, it's called The Festivals on Halacha. It's a Sefer I recommend it to people, whether you're very learned or not very learned. He writes so clearly and so beautifully. And so one of the Sfarim that Rav Zevin wrote is a Sefer called L'Or HaHalacha. And the Sefer L'Or HaHalacha has some, I don't recall, I guess, off the beaten path type of essays. There's a long essay there on the laws or the laws and the status of milchama, of warfare in Judaism. He has an article there about the arguments of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in general sense. He has an argument there, has an essay there about snow and halacha. He has an essay about Shir HaShirim and what halachas we learn. Just, you know, very, very fascinating topics. The very last essay in the Sefer L'Or HaHalacha by Rav Zevin is a sefer entitled, is an article entitled Mishpat Shylock, The Case of Shylock. And the references to the famous Shakespearean play, The Merchant of Venice. So for those who maybe didn't read The Merchant of Venice in high school or who forgot, since they did read it in high school, very, very quickly for our purposes, I'll go over what takes place for our purposes in the play, The Merchant of Venice, and we'll see what Rav Zevin was interested in doing with that. The Merchant of Venice is a story about a merchant from Venice, as the title indicates, whose name was Antonio. And this Antonio found himself at one point short of cash, and he went to borrow money from a Jewish moneylender in the city of Venice by the name of Shylock. Jews, as many of you know, Jews, because of anti-Semitism, were often in the Middle Ages closed out of other professions, many other professions, and Christians, because of their laws, were not allowed to be moneylenders. And so this was a field into which Jews kind of drifted. Many Jews, because they had no choice, they weren't able to participate in other lines of work and so on. So this Shylock was a moneylender, and Antonio needed money. They had had some interactions before, and there's no love lost between them. Antonio really needed the cash, and Shylock wanted to stick it to him a little bit. So Shylock said, listen, I'll lend you the money, but you have to have it by such and such a date, whatever date they agreed on. And he said that if you don't have the money, you don't pay up the debt by the date of the due date, when the loan comes due, you hereby agree that I can cut out a pound of your flesh, the famous pound of flesh. And Antonio, against the advice of some of his friends, agreed to this condition because he was sure that there was not going to be a problem. His ships were going to come in. He had business overseas and whatever else. So Antonio agreed to this arrangement that he would be willing to give up a pound of flesh should he have to default on the loan and not be able to pay when the money comes in, when the date arrived. Well, sure enough, the date arrives and there's some problem and the ships don't come in. He doesn't have any money to pay. So now Shylock wants to take his pound of flesh from Antonio. The case comes before the court in Venice, and there's a whole case. And in the end of the case, basically the judges rule that Shylock is correct. He has the right to take a pound of flesh, but he can only take exactly 1 pound, not an ounce or whatever more, nothing more than exactly 1 pound. And if there's any more, he'll be thrown into prison or worse. And he also can't draw any blood because it just said a pound of flesh, and that's it. So obviously, he was not able to collect, and that's what we need to know for our purposes in terms of the story here this evening. But Rav Zevin, who is obviously familiar with the play, which is a statement in his own right. I mean, Rav Zevin didn't, as far as I know, read English, but the play was translated to many languages. Rav Zevin was originally from Russia, so he maybe read it in Russian or in Hebrew or in Yiddish or whatever. He was familiar with the play, and he decided to analyze what would happen in such a case if it would appear before a Bezdin, before a religious Jewish court, before a Rabbanim. How would they attack this question? How would a Bezdin deal with this situation? We'll leave out the side now that one party was Jewish, one party was not Jewish. I mean, it applies to non-Jews also, but for our purposes this evening, for Zevin's purpose, let's say two Jews had such a contract, such a deal, such an arrangement, and the one agreed that if he doesn't have the money by the due date, he'll give up a pound of flesh. How would a Bezdin approach this situation? Rav Zevin writes in the introduction, it's not just an academic question or intellectual gymnastics, mental gymnastics, because there's a major debate, and I recall talking to my father, Oliver Shalom, about this. To this day, the debate rages, there are articles on both sides. Was Shakespeare an anti-Semite or not? Shylock is not a particularly likable character necessarily. Here, he's kind of a hard-nosed type of character. He's not portrayed in the most favorable light. On the other hand, in this play is the famous statement, the famous soliloquy of Shylock, hath not a Jew blood, doesn't the Jew bleed, doesn't the Jew have feelings, doesn't the Jew have limbs like everybody else, and so on, which is a very powerful piece. And so there's a debate among scholars whether Shakespeare was an anti-Semite or he wasn't, or we just don't know. My father said, we just don't know. He felt the odds are that he was probably not an anti-Semite, but that his writings simply reflected what was the common view of Jews. And not that he had a particular dislike for Jews, but, you know, the Jews were often moneylenders, so he writes about a Jew being a moneylender and so on. And it wasn't necessarily anti-Semite, but what Zevin writes is that if a Beis Din would paskin, that indeed Shalak would have the right to cut out a pound of flesh, something which is abhorrent to us, you know, so that would mean that that Shakespeare is drawing from, you know, what the Jewish law is, and it wouldn't be particularly favorable to analyze things that way. On the other hand, if this were not a Jewish law at all, and the Jewish law would reject such a thing, then whatever Shakespeare's writing is being drawn from secular courts and from secular law. So that's what he writes in introducing this essay. So I say at the outset, it's going to touch upon some very technical points, trying to explain as clearly as possible. We have the sources there. If you find the sources helpful, you can look at them. If not, don't bother. It's whatever whatever works for you. So we'll start. The Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, in the first of the sources, the Rambam tells us that in Jewish law, a mekach, a transaction, there, this is now on the screen if you want to follow, a transaction doesn't work simply with words. Even if both parties agree, and they agree, they don't argue. I'm agreeing to sell you this, and you're agreeing to buy that, and he's in these conditions, and it all, you know, it's all spelled out. You even have Edim, there are witnesses there. Nothing is valid. Hareza Eino Klum, concludes the Rambam, nothing works, okay, unless it's done through a halakhically recognized kinyan, which is a halakhic transaction. Just an agreement by itself does not complete a transaction. So rules the Rambam, and so rules the Shulchan Aruch as well in the second source, Choshem Mishpatzim Kuf Pei Tesif Aleph. Okay, somebody says, I'll give you this, and you'll buy that, and so on. In the second line of source two, Hareza Eino Klum Ad Sheyigmor HaMekach, until there is a completion of a halachic kinyan, called Dover Dover Karoilo. There are different transactions. Land is one type of transaction, animals a different type of transaction, movable property, chattel a different type of transaction, and so on. Whatever it is, it requires a kinyan. However, as the Aruch HaShulchan notes in source three, the Aruch HaShulchan, this is somewhere else in the laws of Matanos, Choshen Mishpatzim Reish Mem Aleph Sif Aleph, he says, Kamo d'mamon dvorim b'lo kinyan lav klumu, just as, in source three now, just as in monetary matters, just words by themselves without a kinyan is invalid, Kamo kain kinyan b'lo dvorim, just doing the kinyan without the words. And it doesn't mean necessarily words, but there has to be a kavana, there has to be an intent. In other words, both the buyer and the seller, this year we have to figure out different plans, but when we arrange for the sale of chametz before Pesach, so both the buyer and the seller have to be aware of what they're doing. And when someone appoints the rabbi as the agent to sell the chametz again, we'll have to do things a little differently this year, but we'll work it out. Stay tuned. But again, there has to be what's called gemiras das. Okay, there has to be intent and understanding on both sides, on the part of both parties to the transaction. Just a kinyan by itself isn't where both people have to be aware of what they're doing. For this reason, we have in halacha, and this is the first thing Rav Zevin deals with, he points out that actually before he thought of this idea, he said there was an article, he mentions this in his sefer, there was an article written by a Mr. Pinchas Schiffman, I have no idea who that is, which appeared Israeli newspaper Hatzofeh in 1935. We have a brief article about it that this Mr. Schiffman wrote about it, and he suggests that the whole deal of halacha has no standing whatsoever. It's got to be canceled. He's got to give him back the money. The whole loan, nothing stands in halacha because of the concept of asmachta. Asmachta. Okay, what is asmachta? So there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, of Chofta Al-Rabbeis, source number four. Okay, says, Ve'elan Apsulam Sachik Bekubia. There are certain people whose testimony in court is invalid, and they're also not permitted to serve as judges. As Rashi points out in five, Lodun Ulahoy, they can't be judges or witnesses. And one of them is Sachik Bekubia, a guy who rolls the dice, who's a gambler. The person's a gambler. And Rashi says in source five, Kulam Mefarsh Begemar, the Gemara will explain why that is. Kulan Me'ein Gazlon in Hain. Because these people listen to the mission, including the gambler, are like thieves. They're in a certain way similar to thieves. And the pasuk says you can't have a rasha who's an aid, a witness, certainly not a judge. What's the problem with Mesachet Bekubia? How is a person who gambles and plays with dice and so on, how is he like a thief? So the Gemara has on Daf Chof Daf Amud Beis, the same Daf Source 6, Mesachet Bekubia, my cover, what did you do wrong? Omer Rameh Barchom, Mishum Dahava Asmachta of Asmachta Lo Kanya. Okay, the problem with the gambler is that he doesn't give over the money if he loses willingly, meaning he thinks that he is an expert in the, you know, expert card player, whatever it is. He has no intention of losing. And therefore, if he does lose, he's giving up the money reluctantly. He's not a willing participant. That's how the Gemara defines Asmata. Rashi says he realized the suffer shehu yachal natzeach. He thinks he's a much better card player, much better strategist in whatever game he's playing than the people he's playing against, and therefore he has no intention of giving the money up to somebody else. And therefore, pa'amim shemanatzkos, but sometimes he loses. So when the other person gets it, he's sort of like a thief, because I said before, in order to give over money, in order to make a transaction, you have to do so willingly. He's not really doing so willingly. He didn't expect this to happen. And therefore, as Rashi says, the second Rashi in 7, Achavtalmabez and Sanhedrin, Kalo Kanya, Bahavale Kain Gzela Biyado. So the recipient gets this money, but it's like it was stolen because he didn't really want it. Now, the Gemara goes on there to say there's a different opinion that said that's not really an asmachta. Okay, it's not a case of an asmachta. And the problem with a gambler is something else. He's not a productive member of society for a different reason. But for our purposes now, we introduce asmachta. So we look at source number 8. The Rambam writes in Parag Yud Aleph of Ilchas Mechira Alocha Aleph, Hamakne ben karkim metaltin lebihisne tenoyin she'efshel kaimon. When a person makes a transaction, you can affix certain conditions. We can say, I'm going to sell this to you, I'm going to buy this from you on condition X, Y, and Z. And if the condition is true, it comes out, then fine. It comes true, then the transaction is valid. And if not, the transaction is invalid. And the Rambam writes at the end of Halacha, on top of the next page, im lo kiyam v'kar b'yarno mishpadatoyim v'hilchus ishus. Right? There's certain rules about tenoyim. Some people remember that we have in the Chumash, that when the children of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, when the Jews were about to enter Eretz Yisrael, they wanted to leave their family on the Eiver LaYarden, right? They wanted to inherit over there on the eastern bank of the Jordan River and not bring their families into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu was first upset with them, to say the least. And basically, they said, no, we'll come in and fight, then we'll go back. So the whole parsha there, the end of Chumash Bamidbar, explains, well, Moshe formulated it in a certain way. Well, if you'll come in, then you'll get this. If you won't come in, so we learn a lot of rules from there. Anyway, the Rambam and Alcha Beis, there on the top of the next page, is again in Hilchos Mechira Perek Yud Aleph. The Rambam writes that this is only true when the condition is something which is accompanied by, it's a valid condition, or it's a condition where the person did it in the right way. But otherwise, he says, otherwise, the Rambam says, if it's not a valid kinyan, then, and the person, even if the person keeps it tonight, it's no good, keeps the condition, it's no good, the person relied or made it dependent upon something where he couldn't really be sure, and that's what's called an asmachta. And the last words of the Rambam, Sharei lo gomar belibo laknoso, he didn't have that gemiras lei, that gemiras das, that full intent. Okay, and the Rambam writes later, halacha vav, that therefore if a person says, if this will happen, if that will happen, and so on and so forth, it depends on how it's said, but it can be, that's the problem of asmachta, that the person doesn't have full gemiras das. The same thing is found in the Shulchan Aruch in source 9, Choshen Mishpat Simon Reish Zion Sif Yud Gimel. Okay, and therefore the whole idea is the person does not willingly give it over because he's relying on X, Y, and Z happening. That's what we thought was going to happen. Okay, then that's not then that's an asmachta, and asmachta lo kanya. Therefore, suggests this Rabbi Mr. Schiffman in the article of Zevin quotes. Okay, well, maybe that's the thing here. Obviously, Antonio had no intention of giving up a pound of flesh. He was quite sure that when the due date would come, he'd have the money. Okay, and I'll agree to give a pound of flesh. But this wasn't a willing decision on his part. Therefore, it's asmachta, and the whole asmachta lo kanya, the whole deal is off. And therefore, an abezin would throw the case out, and you'd have to give him back the money, the whole loan, everything goes out the window because asmachta lo kanya. So Rav Zevin says in his analysis that while this is makes sense on one level, he says if you look at it more carefully, it doesn't really work. It doesn't hold water halachically, because there are situations where perhaps when the person is not really sure and he makes a commitment anyway, okay, then maybe it does work. And there's a difference in a person saying, in his head, I'm sure this is going to be, so therefore I have no intention of giving him money, getting out a pound of flesh. But if he's in doubt, if a person is legitimately in doubt, then that's a discussion in Tosos and Bamitzia, Ein Dar Malal, Dimasko Hochi Labbiyado, source number 10, Machok is Rashi Amiratam. But it could be that it's not an asmachta. Like, for example, you're rolling dice, you're playing a game of chance where you have the same chance of winning or losing. You can't say, oh, I was for sure planning to you know, it was for sure it was going to come out this way. You can't say for sure. There's a difference in a game of chance and a game of skill. That's the whole issue with gambling and halach, which is not our topic now. But in any event, to the Shulchan Aruch rules in Source 11, Simon Rei Zion, that same Simon, Siv Yud Gimel, continues, there are more rights. Avalim ein biyado legamrei, velo biarachem gomesacha bekubya, kevadai gomar of maknami safek. Okay, there are more rules that if it's the guy's not really sure, like in a game of chance, so then he is willingly giving it up because he knows he has a chance of losing. And therefore, there are ways to get out of the asmachta problem. That's why he doesn't think, because maybe we could argue again in the circumstance. Antonio wasn't sure. He had no way of knowing for sure that he was going to have the money. So maybe, you know, maybe it was a case of suffix. It wouldn't be asmachta. The Gemara has, we have this in the laws of Nedarim as well, interestingly enough. The Gemara tells a story. Shavuos Av Chav Vav Medalev, source number 12. Two Talmidim of Rav Kana and Rav Asi, were arguing about what their Rebbe Rav said. Okay, and each one was quite sure. We can have the same discussion today. Each one was quite sure this is what they heard from their Rebbe. And each one swore. Okay, each one swore, this is what Rav said. The other one swore, no, this is what Rav said. So, okay, so what do you do? They go finally go to Rav and ask him, what'd you say? Well, he only said one thing. So the other one was, now the person was crestfallen. Did I mean I swore falsely? So the Gemara says, no, you were led astray, so to speak, by what you thought. Your heart was in your heart, as Rashi says in 13. Your intent was to be truthful. Okay, well, you know, you didn't know. So, and at the time, there was evident quotes of Taz in your days, and Rashi on the base, Sif Yud Beis in 14, where a person says, it's like a bet almost, right? They look at the end of the first line. Zelmer came, Zelmer lo came. Two people, yes and no. And the Nasut Kis Kap, they shake hands. Zelazeh. Shemishekin Roy, Yitain lo Chavera, Ezosach Momom. Right? If I'm right, you'll give me this and this amount of money. It makes a bet, basically. Okay? So it says it's a shkoga. And in any event, but that's when each person is sure. But when it's a legitimate suffix, perhaps there is Gemir's Das and the deal stand. And therefore, Rav Zevin is not convinced that Asmachta is, is enough of a reason to say that this case is would be dismissed. Furthermore, there are other ways out of Asmachta. For example, the Rav in Perek Yud Aleph with Mechir Aleph Zayin says, if you say, Knei Me Achshav, that's a technicality, but basically you perform the transaction now where the other person already has the right to the money now. Not when we see in 2 weeks if X happens, then you'll get it. But you get it now. That's a stronger type of commitment because you're saying, I'm giving it now. Okay, that's based on a mission, but let's see, next page, 16, Samachem at Beis, the Mishnah says, Hilveo Sadev Ramalo im iata nosli mikanva shoshnam harei shalo now. The Gemara says, now a guy makes a condition, so one opinion of the Gemara explaining that Mishnah on Samach Vav Medalev from the bottom of page 17. Maybe that's a proof according to one opinion of Smachta works, but the other one, and Rashi says, when a person says, meaning that you have the right to this money or whatever I'm giving you now, so La Rashi says in 18, Lava Smachta Elakinyan Gomori. Okay, and it's mecher gomu hechzik bo me'achshav b'dam halol. He gets it right now. And that's the Rambam Paskins. And Perek Yud Aleph Chazayim read before, 19, kolomer k'nei me'achshav ain't kana smachta. So again, Rav Zevin says we cannot throw this case of Antonin Shalak out because of asmachta, because there are ways out of the problem of asmachta. Okay, and that's in Shulchan Aruch 2, Sim Reish Zayin Siftes. It can be asmachta unless he said k'nei me'achshav, the last words of 20, me'achshav k'nei, then it is valid. And furthermore, the Gemara Nedarim of Chav Zamed Bey says if they make the deal in the presence of a Bezdin or Bezdin Choshuv, then even Asmachta will work. Hilchasa says the Gemara Chav Zamed Bey Nedarim Asmachta Kanya Vudalo Ones the Konamine Bezdin Choshuv. Okay, the Gemara Rashi explains you need all three things, but Bezdin Choshuv means third Rashi in 22 on Chav Zamed Bey Shehei Mumchal Rabim. It's an expert Bezdin, and okay, all these conditions are needed. What do you mean, expert Bezdin? The Ran there on the page in the Dharma, Sechas the Dharma, the Ran is printed on the side of the page, not in the back. Chav Zayin Mebeis, the Ran writes, who the Karmadev is a Choshu, Klomar, Olim, it's a strong Bezdin. Lafkuye Mamona, it's a Bezdin has the right to extract payment and so on. He gives examples. He doesn't think like the Rambam, you have to have the real Smicha, not that far. We don't have the real smicha today, right? The chain was broken. The Rambam seems to say you need the real smicha. The Rambam rejects that. The Rambam, though, also on our Rambam, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Yud Gimel 24, Asmachta, Shekhan Miyadu, Alibi Bezin Choshev, Harei Zekona, and so on. The Bezin Choshev, it works. And again, in the Shulchan Aruch, Simrei Zayin, Sif Yudalad, Kolomer Knei Me'akshav, and also with Bezin Choshev. So based on all of this, Rav Zevin concludes that the suggestion that the deal with Antonio and shalach should be thrown out because of asmachta, that won't work because there are ways to get around the asmachta problem. So there's a second suggestion as to why it won't work, made also by this Mr. Schiffman. This was, Evan says, more on the right track, although rejected at the end. But there is a Mishnah in B'Metzia Tzadidana and Aleph, 26. Kol amasta mashakosu b'Torah t'noa b'Torah. We said before, a person can make conditions on a business transaction. You can make conditions. You can make a deal. I say, I'll sell you this on a condition that. I'll buy this on a condition the other way. You're allowed to do that. Okay, but you can't be masta mashakosu b'Torah. You can't make the condition be something which is against the Torah. I'll make a condition, I'll sell this to you on the condition that you're Mechal Shabbos or whatever. You can't make a condition that's against the Torah. And Rashi says the deal stands without the condition. We'll get back to that. What's the issue here? Well, the Pasuk says in Parshas Kisetze that it is forbidden by the Torah to even hit somebody, okay, to even hit somebody, let alone take out a pound of flesh, not about to hit another Jew. Pasuk says in Parshas Kisetze, Perakov, Pesuk, and Bezin Gimel, it's talking about Bezin that has to administer lashes, malchus, to someone who's deserving of a punishment in Bezin. And the Pasuk says, be very careful, Pasuk Gimel, Arboim Yakenu, you give exactly 40 lashes. We don't even do 40, we do 39 for other reasons. But exact number, Lo Yosef, and I'll give one more. Not one more. And actually, you can give less sometimes as a doctor who assesses the person. But be that as it may, you can't do more. That's the pasuk. That's a bezdin. So Rashi in Chumash says in 29, Mikanas har lamakes chavero. From here we see you can't just beat up even bezdin is not permitted to hit somebody more than the time the Torah allows. So Kavah Chumash, certainly an individual is not allowed to hit another person. That's the law of Lo Yosef Pen Yosef. The Gemara Ksubas among other places. Chov v'chaver, that's the din of Lo Yosef Pen Yosef, right? That's Rashi says in Ksubas also in 31. That's Azhar Lamakes Chavero. And the Rambam Paskins Hilchus Chov Lamazik Perik Eloch Aleph 32. The Rambam Paskins Osur La Adam Lachvo Ben Batzmei Chaver. You're not allowed to hurt another person. And well, a chovel usually means some kind of damage where their blood is drawn and so on. Then the Rama writes very quickly. Well, you're not allowed to hit anybody, even if you don't draw blood. And then there, whether man or woman, or young, old, doesn't matter. Derech nitzon, I raise over below sase. There's a regular law in the Torah. Okay, and the Rambam says, because it says Lo Yosef, that pasuk, and the Rambam says the end of 32. Im his hira Torah. Good person, not allowed to hit it all. And the same thing appears in Shulchan Aruch, Chosh Mishpat, Simon Tov Chof, Sif Aleph, not allowed to hit, you're not even raise your hand to strike somebody. Okay, now, if this is the case, so this person suggested, well, how can this condition work? You can cut out a pound of flesh. That's Masna Masha Kosov B'Torah. You're making a condition that's against the Torah. So, of course, it doesn't stand. But Rav Zevin says, if you look carefully at the way that Masa Masha Kosov Torah works, he points to a Gemara in many places based on a Tosefta and Kiddushin Parak Gimel Halacha Tes 34, where it says, for example, Al Menas She'ein Lecha La'Asher Ksusa Onar, a man betroths, you know, does Kiddushin, he betroths a wife, but he says, I'm doing this on condition, I'm not going to have any of the Torah required obligations that the Torah sets. So Gemara says, that's no good. The Kiddushin is invalid, okay? I'm sorry, the condition is invalid, and the condition stand, we disregard. Ona harezo mikudeshes utno bato. Okay? Now, that's one of the classic examples, because the person is saying, I'm giving this ring or whatever it is to you on the condition that I don't have to uphold what the Torah says a man is obligated to give to his wife. Okay, so that's Masa Masha Kosov Torah. So it says with Zevin, one second. In the classic case of Masa Masha Kosov Torah, the action is okay, the marriage, right? The act of Kiddushin, giving the ring or whatever it is, right? It's the condition that's the problem. He says, on condition that, I'll do this against the Torah. But he said, that's not what's happening over here. Because here, basically, Zevin writes, with Antonio and Shylock, he's saying, it's the action that's the problem. If you don't pay me in time, I can cut out a pound of flesh. That's not Masna Masha Kosov Torah. Masna Masha Kosov Torah, as the word Masna from the word Tanai, the Tanai is the problem. Here, the Tanai is not the problem. He says, if you don't pay me back, well, that's not against the Torah. If you don't pay back on time, it's the action that he wants to do afterwards that's the problem. So if Zevin feels that that's not Masna Masha Kosov Torah, and he says, furthermore, in the case of the marriage, for example, the the what he wants to get out of is a result of the marriage. Here it's the other way around. As a result of the of you're not paying me, so then I want to cut out. It's backwards. It's a reverse. And therefore he says it's not masa mashkar. Story quotes a Chavos Das Niradei the Birim Kusamach Aleph Sivkot Meches, where he writes, he gives an example of such a case, and he says that's not called masa mashkar kasubat Torah. That's something else. It's a tit for tat. It's a different thing. But although he rejects this, Rav Zevin says, but it's on the right track. Because forget about Masa Masha Kasuba Torah. How could a Bezin possibly even have a thought of allowing Shylock to cut out a pound of flesh? Forget Masa Masha Kasuba, technically, and forget Asmachta. Those things we can get out of Asmachta. It's not the format of Masa Masha Kasuba Torah, but he says it's still against the Torah. Somebody can't cut the pound of flesh out. We saw before, you're not allowed to hit somebody, so of course you can't cut out the pound of flesh. And he quotes a Tshuvas HaRosh, Klal Samaches Simin Yud, in 36, and he says they had a case, Chachmei Bergash, right, in a certain city, and they want a certain Jew owed money, and he had agreed that if he doesn't pay the money, the other person, the other Jew, can take him as a slave. An Eved. Can take him as an Eved. So the Rosh writes, Dabar Baruhu, he can't do that because we don't have that situation of Avdus today. And furthermore, the Torah says only by Gneva, Venim Karb Gneva. So if you steal, then you become an Eved, not if you can't pay back a debt and so on. And they can't look at the second line of the next page. Afilo im Shimed Gufo, even if the guy said, no, I'm doing your will, I'm giving you my body. You can't do it. It doesn't work. Okay? It doesn't work because the Torah doesn't recognize such a thing. So therefore, it says of Zevin, it should be a simple point. The Torah doesn't recognize cutting out a pound of flesh. So end of discussion. Now, he does point to something because the Rosh drew as an example of Gemara Baba Kama, Rashi Mishnah, on Tzadik Beis Halal from 37, where let's say a person says, Omer, 37, Sameis Einai, I give you permission to blind me. I'm a shogun. I give you permission to blind me. It'll break my arm. So Shibir Esragli, or Shabir Esragli, you can break my leg, whatever you want. Chayev. Okay? The Mazik, still, even though the other guy gave him permission, he's Chayev. He's supposed to pay the damages. Amenas liftor, and if he says, "But I'm doing a condition that'll be exempt," still chayev. And that's what the Rosh brought as a raya. That again, you can't go against what the Torah says. It doesn't matter what the other person. You made a condition. You're not allowed to do it. Okay. Now this is based. Now the problem is that the Rosh himself, Rav Zevin points out, the Rosh himself in that Gemara Baba Kama and Parches and Yiches. It seems to say that's for a different reason. The Gemara discusses because the Gemara says when the second party agreed, yeah, you can break my leg. The Gemara has an expression in 38, yesh hein shu kalav, yesh lav shu kahein. Sometimes the person says yes, he means no. It's sarcastic. You know, well, we don't care if I break your leg? Oh, sure, no problem. He said, yeah, go ahead. Obviously, he didn't mean it, right? It was sarcastic. So sometimes the person doesn't really mean it. And therefore, the ma'asik is chayev. That's what the Gemara emerges in that Gemara Baba Kama Tzadik Gimel Alef Korn B'Yechonon. And the Rosh himself in 18, okay, I'm going to leave out the Rashi for now. Sometimes when a person says yes, he means it sarcastically. The implication being that if the victim in this case, the Nizak, would not mean it sarcastically, says the Rosh, and perhaps the ma'asik would be potter. Perhaps the ma'asik would be potter. However, the Rosh says even if that's true, you might argue that he's potter from a dine mominus, from a financial obligation point of view, from a monetary point of view. But it's still usher to do it. You can't remove the issur. The Torah prohibits it. So the Rosh says, Zevin says, even if the Rosh is right, that it's only a technicality because the guy didn't really mean it when he gave permission, implying if he really did mean it, it would be okay, it still wouldn't work. It might be potter from a dine mominus, from a financial law, from a monetary law perspective, but it would still be forbidden from a Torah law perspective. So even if he's potter, it's still usher. So therefore, over here, we would have to say the Bezin would throw out we would reject the case, right? Because Shalak cannot cut the pound of flesh out. But now Rav Zevin says, one second. So what happens to the money? He did borrow, I think it was 3,000 ducats or whatever the amount of money was, okay? Does have to pay the money back. Or what if, says Rav Zevin, Shylock would walk up Antonio would walk up to Shylock and say, sorry, I don't have the money. Cut away. You can cut out the pound of flesh. Oh, you can't cut out a pound of flesh because the Torah prohibits it? That's not my problem. That's your problem. I'm willing. Go ahead. You cut. You're not allowed to because the Torah asks it. Okay, goodbye. Have a nice day. And he wouldn't have to pay the money back. Right? Who says that the whole deal is off? In other words, maybe the deal's not off. The deal stands. The loan stands. Okay. Based on technical reasons, Shalak can't collect on cutting out the pound of flesh. Okay, but which is similar in a way to what, you know, again, the court in Venice concluded that he can do it, but he's got to cut exactly a pound and he can't draw any blood and whatever else. Okay, so same thing, but he didn't have to pay the money back. So maybe that should be the case in Halacha Turav, Zevin says. Right, Enochanam, we've proven, even without Asmachta, even without Mashakazim of Torah, we've proven he can't do something that's forbidden by Torah law. But what happens to the money? That's the question. And we find other cases where, sometimes we say the person owes something. He does owe him. In other words, he owes him that pound of flesh. Just due to technical reasons, he can't pay it, but he can't give it because you're not allowed to cut the pound of flesh out. So as Evan quotes from some Achronim, the Maharit, in Chelek Beis, Aradeus, and Mem, in his Chubas, talks about ribbis, paying back interest. He said, technically speaking, the borrower is required to pay back that money. That was the deal. The deal stands. The only thing is he can't because the Torah doesn't allow ribbis. Right? That's what he discusses. Okay? There's a chiv to pay back the ribbis. The Torah doesn't allow you to do it. And it doesn't allow the lender to take the ribbis. But in terms of, you know, globally conceptually, there is the debt over here. He discusses it also, the Mishnah Lamelech. In Hilchos Mavalo, Perek Ches Halacha Tezvav, he quotes Avnei Miluim, Simches Sivkot Chav Beis in 43. I quoted it here. If you have time, you want to look at it. Okay, there is the Mekach Chaim. The deal stands. He just can't pay back the ribbis, but he does owe him the ribbis. And there is a similar situation. It's somewhat inappropriate, but the Torah prohibits in the Torah. Torah in Parshas Kiseitze, Perek Chav Gimel of Dvarim, Pasuk Yud Tes, talks about what's called Esnon Zona. A prostitute gets her payment. So the Torah says she can't use that money now. Losavi Esnon Zona, 44. Losavi Esnon Zona, Umchir Kalabesh Malkecha. You can't bring Esnon Zona, Rashi is Nosono Tleb Esnona Posol Akrova. Right? If the man gives the woman an animal in exchange for her sexual services, so you cannot use that animal's posol for a korban. Okay, that's the technicality. It's posol, korban based on posol in the Torah. Okay, but the Gemara in Baba Kama Daf Ayin Amud Beis says that even if the relationship was with somebody who's forbidden to by Torah law, okay, but Baal Imo is a dramatic case, but someone who's forbidden to by Torah law, not a stama woman, but a woman that he's one of the arayas, one of the forbidden sexual relationships, and so on, Rashi implies in Ayin Amud Beis in 47 that really he doesn't have to pay, but why? Because since he was with a woman that he's chayv. Mises Bezin, it's a chiyuv, it's a stricter chiyuv, right? We have a rule called kom lei b'drav minei. If I shoot a guy and kill him, so I made a hole in his shirt with the bullet, I don't have to also pay for the shirt, right? I pay with my life because I'm a murderer. I also damaged the shirt. We forget about that. It's called kom lei b'drav minei. So the implication of this Gemara is that if a person has a relationship with a woman that he's not allowed to, and it was for money, in a prostitute kind of arrangement. So he doesn't have to pay because of kama over the rabbinate. The implication being without that, he would have to pay, and that's what Rashi seems to imply. So therefore, getting back to our case, there is a debt here. That's what Zevin says. Shylock, Antonio owes Shylock. What does he owe him? He owes him a pound of flesh because the due date arrived, didn't have the money. And now Shylock is saying, okay, I owe it to you, take it. You can't take it. That's a technicality, okay? You can take it. The prostitute's not supposed to take it either because it's against the halacha for him to sleep with her and so on. So that's the issue. And that's really the question. So Rav Zevin suggests, based on the Gemara about Zora, also, again, talking about Esnon Zona, on Samach Beis and Beis going over Samach Gimel and Aleph, the Gemara discusses the timing here. There are certain situations where if the woman received the animal in advance, okay, this guy was interested in sleeping with this woman, not a woman he's forbidden to, just a woman, okay, he wants to sleep with her. She gave her the payment, she insisted on payment in advance, she's going to come back in 2 weeks. Okay, so what if in the meanwhile, that's the case, I'm saying it outside to save a few moments, what if in the meanwhile, she offers it as a carbon. So the Gemara suggests that it's acceptable, that it's good. It's good as a carbon. It does not have the disqualification of Esnon Zona because at that point they haven't had relations yet, and therefore, and it's hers. And the point is, halachically, it's hers. And Rav Zevin points to both the Chiddush HaRashbo there in Avodah Zarah, Sam Gimel Aleph in 51, and the Ritva in 52, on Sam Gimel Aleph 2. These two great Chachmei Sorad point out that really, okay, she should be able to give it. The Gemara concludes that she can't, but she should be able to give it because she acquired it. She acquired it legally, and it belongs to her. So both of them have to come up with a teretz. The Rashba comes with a teretz. Well, she never really took it. It was just near her house. Although Ritva says that she didn't, he wasn't given as a transaction. Get to come up with technical answers. But what emerges is that it actually, it belongs to her. And they can't. He can't cancel the deal now. He can't come back to her and say, you know what, I changed my mind. Okay, I became a Baal Tshuva in the meanwhile, and therefore I'm not going to sleep with you. I want my animal back. Technically, she doesn't have to give it back. Okay, because the transaction stood. It belongs to her. Even though he had never had relations with her, but it still belongs to her. And she can even donate it as a carbon, as we said, which proves that it belongs to her, because you're not allowed to give something as a carbon if it doesn't belong to you. So the deal here, and that's what Rav Zevin says, should stand as well. The deal stands, the loan stands, and as a result, even though Shylock cannot collect the pound of flesh, Antonio can say, well, that's your problem. Okay, the Torah prohibits you collecting a pound of flesh. I'm sorry to tell you, but I'm going home. Okay, let me know when you want to collect it. I'll give it to you. You can't take it. You're out of luck. The deal stands, and that's the end of it. So that sort of Zevin builds this whole case on all these technical halachic points. Seems to suggest that he quotes a Chavos Das, that same piece from 4 in Siman Kuf Samach Aleph, the Chavos Das says the other way, that she would have to give back. It's not a transaction, but he doesn't hold like that. So where are we at? We're at the point of Shylock basically losing out. The deal stands. He lost the money, and he can't collect a pound of flesh. But then Rav Zevin does a dramatic turn and says, this is all, I'm going to read you his words, okay, because just as I said, he wrote so beautifully. Ilu hayu boim ladon, if we were coming to judge this case, okay, then we would have to say that Antonio would be allowed to present the pound of flesh, and if Shala can't take it, that's his problem, and that's the end of it. But he says, Zui Hashem, that's some question, because there's a totally different thing you have to consider here to begin with, and that is the following. The Torah says, the Gemara Mishnah says, based on Pesukim in the Torah, Tzadi Amid Aleph and Baba Kama go over to Amid Beis, the Mishnah says, Hachovo Ba'atzmo. The person self-damages. You're not allowed to cause damage to yourself. Forget about somebody else. Even though you're not allowed to, you're putter. But others, people who cause you damage, they're chayev. So Tosus wondered, what do you mean, putter? Who are you going to pay? Yourself? Of course, you're putter. So what it means is, no, you might think that if I'm damaging myself, someone else can damage me too, right? If I see a guy already hitting himself, so let me hit him too. Why not? You know, obviously he doesn't care, right? So that's what it means. But all right. So someone's just asking, again, Rav Zevin is arguing in this case, assuming the two parties are both Jewish. It may or may not matter. He talks about it, but not for right now. Anyway, the halacha, that halacha appears in the Shulchan Aruch in some Tav Chav Sif Lamed Aleph. Chovo ba'atzmo, alfa b'shenu roshoi, okay, he's potter. Why? Okay, why are you not allowed to harm yourself? What's the difference? What's anybody else's business? I understand I'm not to harm another person. What's it someone else's business what I do to myself? We see this today, right? I'm sure you've all seen. So I'll go to the party. I'll get corona. Big deal. It's not my business, right? Forget about the fact that you infect somebody else. But can a person even say, it's up to me. What? No one else's business what I do. So the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Balatan, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, writes in 57, okay? He says, you know why? Even the guy gives you reshus, you know why? Look at the key words right here, right after the blue. Ki ein la adam reshus al gufo klal. A person does not own his own body. You don't own your body. You have no right to damage it because it's not yours. You can't be mitzar yourself and harm yourself, even deprive yourself unless you're doing it for tshuva purposes and so on. So that's Rav Zevin's key point, he said, according to Shulchan Aruch Harav. You have no right to your own body, so to speak. You have no right to harm yourself. And he brings a proof. There is a Gemara in Sanhedrin Pei Dalam and Beis. The Pasuk in the Torah and Parshas Emor Perakav Dal Pasuk of Aleph, the Vayikra, talking about someone who's Makeh Behema and Makeh Adam. And you're put to death. Okay, what do you mean Makeh Adam? You're not put to death for hitting a person. It means, Rashi explains there, Makeh Avav Imo. Talking about hitting and drawing blood from a parent. So, but the Gemara concludes based on the connection between Makeh Behema and Makeh Adam. The Gemara says on Hedin Pedal Ray 60, Tana de Bechizkia, it's for refuah purposes, it's allowed. For medicine purposes. For example, in the case of Makeh's Dam, you have the son as a doctor, a dentist, and he's or the daughter, whatever, is treating his father, mother, it's all the same. Son, daughter, father, mother, doesn't matter. The child is a doctor, a dentist, and he's treating the parent, he's drawing blood. Okay, but it's for a refuah person, man. Help the person get better, then it's allowed. Makeh refuah is potter. So the Gemara asks, so can indeed a son do makis dam la'aviv? So the Gemara says, yes, it's allowed. But nonetheless, third line of 60, Rav lo shovik lebrei lemishka le silva. Rav did not allow his son to take the splinter out. And the Marbo Ravina did not allow his son to take some sort of a, you know, moisten up some kind of a burn and so on. Why Dilma Chavel? Because afraid he might hurt him, might do chavala. So the Gemara asks, well, then no one should be allowed to do it. No, because everyone else is just an Isser. Here it's a din of Misa. But the question is, what do we need? If you had, if you are allowed to give permission to somebody, what do we have to come on to a whole learn, the whole lumdus? Well, if the parent gives permission, right? I'm sorry, if you're doing it for refuah, it's allowed. What do you mean for refuah? If my parent gives me permission, that should be enough. Right? What do you need refuah? I'd have to come to that reason. If for medicinal reasons, it's allowed. For medical reasons, it's allowed. He gave him permission. Okay? And the answer is because that doesn't help. Because you have no right to give permission to anybody to harm your body or to harm yourself. Okay? Unless you think, well, maybe it's different by parents. The Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin Perek Rav Halacha Aleph learns Azhara Lamaki Avimah from that same source we had above. Arboim HaKel HaYosef, the Kibbezin can't, you know, hit somebody. So it's the same source. There's no difference. Now, full disclosure of Zevin points out that the Torah Evan in Megillah Chav Chesem and Aleph in 65, that he suggests a difference. Maybe parents, there's different parents, you know, they can't, another person can be mochel, can let you hit him and harm him, just parents can't. That's what Torah says. The Minchas Chinuch goes so far, Mitzvah Ches, Oz Gimel 66, the Minchas Chinuch goes so far as to say that if somebody gives you permission, then it's allowed, there's no lav at all, whether it's a parent to anybody else. Okay, and he writes at the end, it's obvious that way. Rav Zevin thinks it's not so obvious. He disagrees with this Minchas Chinuch, but full disclosure, Minchas Chinuch is an important authority. He does say that if the person gives permission, whether it's a parent or anybody else, then you're allowed to harm him or hit him or do anything. But Rav Zevin feels it's not correct, and he brings many rais he thinks it's not correct. For example, the Pasuk says in Parshas Masay, Perek Lamed Hey of the Midbar Pasuk Lamed Alef, somebody's a murderer, he's to be put to death by Bezin if there were witnesses and so on and so forth. And you can't get out of it just by paying money. Let's say a guy's rich, so he tells the family, listen, yes, I killed the relative, but you know what? I feel bad about it now. I'll give you $5 million. You'll be set for the rest of your lives. So the family may decide, you know what? It's worth it. We're poor people. I'd rather take the money. Torah says you're not allowed to do that. Okay, you're not allowed to do that. Look in the Rambam, Hilchos Rotzeach, Parakal Avalocha Dalet, 69. The Rambam writes, Umuzhar and Bezin Shaoli Kach Kofer, you can't take any money. Okay, Vafil Nosan Kol Momen Shabolom. No matter how much money he offers. Afilu rotza gol adam, even if the family, the next of kin, is okay with it. Why? Look at the words of the Rambam. She'ein nafshol shazeh anerga kinyan gol adam, ela kinyan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The person who was killed, whose life was snuffed out, did not belong to him. It belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person's very life belongs to God. And therefore, you don't have the right to say, well, I'll take money or whatever else instead. You can't do it. And for that same reason, we find something else that's very fascinating, as Evan points out. There's a pasuk in the Chumash Parshas Kedoshim, Ba'ikra Parikatas, pasuk in Zion. It says the first half of the pasuk talks about Lashon Hara, but the second half, Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echo, right? You're not allowed to stand by idly when someone else's blood is being spilled. As Rashi explains, in 71, you see somebody dying, and you can save him. A guy's drowning or something, and you can save him. Sometimes you can't save, but if you can, right? And so that's the Gemara quotes that as a mocker. You can't just say, I'm none of my business. You have to try and save the person if you can. But there's another pasuk which the Gemara quotes in Parshas Kisetze, talking about restoring lost items. Hashavas Aveda. And it says at the end of the Parshas Kisetze, Parakov Beis, Sukum Aleph, the Gimel talks about you're not allowed to ignore when you see someone with a lost item, you have to return it with the signs, and if you know you return it to, and so on. Bashevo so low. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Gimel Aleph in 73 says, what do you need the pasuk that says you're not allowed to stand idly by the blood of somebody else? I know you have to save someone because if you have to return his wallet that you found, then obviously if you have to return his health, if somebody's drowning and you can save him, you even have to return his lost money. Certainly you have to return his life if you're in position to do it. What do you need a different pasuk of Los Samadol Dam Re'echa? So Gemara gives a teretz and says, well, there are limitations. I might have thought that you know, that I don't have to do as much, or whatever. The Gemara gives an answer, but Rav Zevin points out, one second, Rav Zevin points out that the very question is a problem. I have a different reason you can't learn from Hashavas Aveda, right? The Gemara proposed we should be able to learn from Hashavas Aveda, just like you have to return somebody's lost wallet, you have to return his health to him if you're in position to do it, right? Rav Zevin says, hold everything. That's not necessarily true. That wouldn't be a good enough limud. Why? Because there's something called Aveda Midas. where a person throws something away intentionally. The Gemara says about Metzia, Chof Hayim at Aleph, Ashpa, guy throws some in the garbage, that's Aveda Midas, right? Because he knows it's going to be collected later on, it's going to be thrown away. So there's a Medrash Tanoim that says, Prat Lamabed Mamal Daito, right? Asher Tova, that's a pasuk from before, something the person lost, and not that he caused it to get lost himself. Okay, that's called Aveda Midas. And the Rambam Paskins, Hilchot Zeil Aveda, Perek Yud Aleph, Aleph, Hama'abed Mamal Das, Ein Is Kokenlo. If a person loses something, quote unquote, loses, he gets it lost on purpose. You don't have to return it. And Shulchan Aruch Paskin the same way in Sim Reish, Samach Aleph, Chosh Mishnah, Siv Dalet, right? It's called Aveda Midas. So therefore, I would think, says Rav Zevin, well, if we only learned about a person that you have to restore his life to him from the pasuk of Hashavas Aveda, I would come to the conclusion, let's say a guy is ready to kill him, so he's killing himself. So maybe then I wouldn't have to save him, because just like if he lost his wallet, I don't know, on purpose, I don't have to return it to him. So if we learn out what you have to do to save someone's life from the case of Hashavas Aveda, returning a lost item, well, he's doing it on purpose. Right, he's purposefully taking his own life away. So, and Rav Zevin says that's an absurd conclusion. Now, he acknowledges again, it's not such an absurd conclusion. I mean, Chaschinuch, believe it or not, in Mitzvah Reish Lamed Zayin, in Oz Beis, in 80, in the Kometz HaMincha, that's in his Oris, says, he thinks, Ech im echad ma'abed asmodas yochal acher latzil, efshar de'eno muzer alav. Perhaps you don't have to. But Rav Zevin thinks it's wrong. Okay, he thinks that there's no, why? Because he says there's no concept of Aveda Midas on your life, on your body. You can't, quote unquote, lose it on purpose. You can't harm it on purpose. It's not yours. A person's life doesn't belong to himself. And he says it's interesting. We have the term, we had it by Hashavas Aveda back in the in that source. It says, Adro Shachicha, you have to hold on to a lost item till the person comes searching for it. And Rav Zevin suggests in his own Chiddush that the word drosh, Dalad Reish Shin, meaning searching for something, it's something that belongs, you're trying to find something that belongs to you. Okay? And he says, look what the pasuk says about spilling blood. Parshas Noach, Parshas Perek Tes, pasuk Hey. The ach es dimchem lenafshoseichem ed rosh, the same shorish. Or the brothers, when they're having all the trouble with Yosef and Mitzrayim before Yosef revealed himself. Perek Membeis, pasuk Chav Beis. Okay. Begam domo hine nidrosh. Right? Something's being restored here. So Rav Zevin says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ed rosh, I'm chasing after something which belongs to me, right? That's what he suggests that the word edrosh means. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you take someone's life, that's me. That's me you're hurting. That's me you're harming. The person doesn't own his own life. And Rav Zevin then quoted a din, okay, that the Rambam mentions, Perek San, we'll just finish up this a couple of moments. Hilchas Sanhedrin, Perek Yud Ches, Halacha Vav. Gzeiras HaKosavhi, listen to this. She'ein memisin bezin v'lo malkinis odna bahudas piv, ela al pishnayim edin. Let's say a person admits murder, or admits whatever capital offense there is, and he deserves to be executed by bezin for that offense. There are no edim, no case, but he admits it. Or he admits something not as severe. He admits something that he deserves malchus lashes for. The halacha is, the Rambam writes, the gzeiras hakosav, question where exactly the gzeiras hakosav is. But he says the gzeiras hakosav, that we don't punish a person based on his own admission, only with two edim. Okay, you have to have two edim, al pishnayim edim yokum dov, you have to have two edim, and without the edim, we don't execute him. Says the Radvaz on that Rambam, 84. He says, you know why? Because at the look at the end of the Tam Shekosav Rabbeinu is, you know, it's Gzeres HaMelech. We don't know the reason, but I'll give you a reason. Ef Shalosek Sastam, Fisha'ein Nafshal Sha'odom Kinyono, Ela Kinyon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person cannot, I can admit something in terms of money, because it's my money, but I can't punish myself, so to speak, in terms of losing my life, because I don't own my life. Ein nafshal she'adam kinyano ela kinyan hakadosh baruch hu, and therefore his own admission doesn't make a difference in monetary matters. You have a principle called hadas baldin kimei edim dami. The person admits it, it's like 100 edim came, 100 witnesses came. But here, it's not his to admit, so to speak. It's not his life. It's his money. Okay, so in monetary case it works. Not his life, because his life is not his. The Rimagash, Rishon, earlier than the Radbaz, says it in the Tshuva Sim Kuf Peyvav, the Torah did not let a person harm himself, and therefore ain adam chayav mashem modal atzmo. Okay, and finally, He says, you know, we have a din. It's a famous din. The Mishnah Bava Kama Pei Gimel Beis. You harm somebody, you have to pay for five things, one of which is nezek. Okay, you pay nezek. You also have to pay for medical bills, other things, but nezek, right? Nezek is the first, and then there are four other things. What is nezek? The Mishnah says, simeis eino. Let's say I poked somebody's eye out. Okay, I broke his leg. How do we pay him back? So we know the Pusik says in 88, the Pusik in Parash Mishpatim, ayin tachas ayin, eye for an eye. We all know that's not what you do. You pay money. Right, everyone knows that. It doesn't literally mean an eye for an eye. You pay him money. How much money? So the Mishnah 86, the Mishnah Bava Kama, Pei Gimel Beis says how much? You assess how much the person would have been able to be purchased or was worth as a slave with two eyes, and how much is worth now with one eye, and that or with the two arms, now he has only one arm, or whatever else. Okay, Kilu Heaven Nimka Bashuk. We figure out how much he was worth before, how much he's worth now, we pay the difference. So for them, really, that's what an eye is worth. That's what a person's arm is worth. Obviously not. Okay. Yes, we paskin ayin takas ayin. You give deme eno. Okay. We don't really take the limb. We get that. Okay. That's a gemara in Bava Kama. That same in the next off on pay dollar and off. You learn that from psukim that I printed here in 1991. Okay. Plus there's an emor park of dollar psukim. You test and chav. He says you don't take the limb. You take money. Okay. But the gemara again on pay dollar and off in 92. But the truth is, I mean. Why not? What do you mean? You take the value? That's not the value. That's the utilitarian value. So why do you only have to pay for the utilitarian value? Because it's only, says Rav Zevin, the utilitarian value that belongs to you, the victim. Okay? Your eye, your limb is worth a lot more. Okay? But it's not yours, so to speak. It belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the only thing we can do in Bezdin is assess the utilitarian value. Look at the words of the Rambam in 93, Hilchos Chov Mazik Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel. Zeh Shenem V'Torah and Seren. Why does the Torah say, that's the old question. Why does the Torah say an eye for an eye? It doesn't mean it. Old question. Right? What does it say? Ayin tachas, ayin shein, tachas shein, regal tachas. Just say what you mean. Money. What if to figure out Gemara's in, again, I pray for the Gemara's for in Peidam in Bava Kama. If the whole Lima, just say it means money. The Rambam tells you why. It's didactic. It says, Shehu Roy Lechasra. He deserves that. This guy poked someone eye. He deserves to have his eye poked out. We don't do it. Okay? We can't do it. But he deserves to have his eye poked out. And therefore, on this basis of all these proofs that a person's body, a person's life does not belong to him himself, says Rav Zevin, the Bezdin would cancel the whole deal. If Antonio comes forward, then yeah, Antonio had no right to pledge a pound of his flesh to begin with because it's not his. He doesn't own it. And therefore, the whole deal was bought on Mavuto from the beginning. And therefore, he has to pay the money back. He can't tell Shala, take the pound of flesh. Oh, you can't do it. That's your problem. No. The whole deal was off to start with. That's the halacha, says Rav Zevin, because he had no right to pledge a pound of flesh to start with because a person's body doesn't belong to him. He writes, Hachoza shel shala kentinius v'lufi halacha batel amavuto meikaro. Rav Zevin concludes, it's upgefract, it's rejected from the beginning. Okay, and even if he says it wouldn't kill the person who was a pound of flesh, and by the way, even if it was a guy, doesn't matter. He said the deal is off from the beginning because a person doesn't own his body. I'll just conclude, source 94, we say in the Slichas before Rosh Hashanah Kippur and through Aseres Mitzvah, Hanasham Alach. Ba'guf palach, right? The spirit, the neshama, we say, belongs to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the guf, the body, is your handiwork. And then again, we say, ha'neshama lach va'guf shalach, right? The neshama belongs to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the guf also belongs to you. That's what we acknowledge. Everything we have belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person departs the world, so the guf is put into the ground where it came from, right? The Pasuk says in Bereshis, Adam, you know, we were taken from the ground and we put back in the ground. The guf goes into the ground and the neshama goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We speak about a yard site and so on, and the neshama shav and aliyah and so on. Everybody understand that. And the neshama loch, the neshama is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But a guf paloch also. And a neshama loch and a guf shaloch. That belongs to you as well. We can't abuse our bodies. We have to take care of our bodies. We're acutely aware of this. Right now, we're acutely aware as we sit indoors, we can't get together in shuls, and we can't have siyumim and sudas mitzvahs and so on and so forth. And we're tuning in on screens and so on because ultimately, we understand that it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't harm yourself. You can't do things that are detrimental to your health. You have to protect your health. You can't say, well, what's anybody's business what I do? That's not the case. It's not your body. And I would just add the tefillah. the tefillah that this one line from Slichas, this famous line from Slichas, incorporates. Hanashom Malach v'aguf Malach, we say, Chusah Malach, he should have mercy on his handiwork. He should have mercy on us. We need mercy right now. The Jewish people in the whole world is in need of Chusah Malach, right? To have mercy. And again, Hanashom Malach Hashem, Asay Leman Shemecha, V'yes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that all the people who are in need of Refuah Shleima should have a Refuah Shleima, that all the neshamas who are needed have an aliyah, the neshamas should have an aliyah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Jaseh Leman Shemecha, he can bring this to an end whenever he wants, in whatever manner he wants, and we hope he does so as immediately as possible. I thank everyone for joining me again. L'ilui Nishmas, my father, Rabbi Yehuda Yaakov Shmuel, Professor Leah Taubes, Zichron Levrocha, may his neshama have an aliyah. May all the neshamas of all Jews have an aliyah. And again, may everyone who is in need of a refuah shleima be granted a refuah shleima. Thank you so much for tuning in, and everyone should have we should be strong and await the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu should come very quickly. Thank you very much. Thank everybody. Very meaningful that so many people are going to be here. If it was, we'll say it was your father. My gold position. I don't know how to cover really nice it.
Rabbi, I have a shayla. Can I ask? We
missed him a lot.
He
said that he didn't fall asleep because, and he said he wanted an iPad.
How do you leave the meeting?
I wanted to get into the scene before. It was interesting.
I don't remember you asking to dance.
But then I started singing at the people
as a child. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
I was just too white.